Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program, coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on Facebook. And in case you'd like to comment on the stories we are covering, just go to our page DW Africa and leave your comments.
That's right, indeed, Zipporah. Coming up, crisis talks between Togo's government and opposition groups begin in the capital, Lomé. Could they be the last chance for the two sides to end a political crisis that has dogged the country for the last 6 months?
I think the hope of everyone is that they actually reach a consensus and that they could find a lasting solution out of the crisis that the country has been experiencing.
Authorities in Nigeria release hundreds of people accused of supporting Boko Haram, an Islamic extremist group, citing a lack of evidence.
Not necessarily whatever the security agencies will gather as evidence will be admissible in law.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here's a chance to listen to what's been happening around the world.
I'm Shay Meineke with DW News. Long-awaited talks between Togo's government and opposition members began in capital Lomé on Monday. Ghana's President Nana Akufo-Addo and Guinea President Alpha Condé are brokering the 10-day talks, which hopes to resolve Togo's six-month political crisis. Protesters have been calling for long-serving President Pierre Ngasingbe to step down. Eugene Aaron, Director of Communications for Ghana's Presidency, discussed with DW about Ghana's efforts to resolve the crisis.
This will be the very first opportunity they'll have to sit down face-to-face to address whatever concerns they have and join the cause to find common ground amongst the political parties.
Thousands of Zimbabweans took to the streets on Monday to pay tribute to iconic opposition leader Morgan Tsvangirai, who died Wednesday at 65 after a battle with colon cancer. Zimbabwe's new president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, paid his respects during Sunday's funeral, urging the country to unite in his honor.
Let us all be brothers and sisters and come together and mourn our former prime minister. And with that spirit, let us move forward as a people and united for the development of our country.
German Chancellor Angela Merkel has nominated Saarland State Premier Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer as next Secretary General of Merkel's conservative CDU party. Saarland's 55-year-old premier would take over from Peter Tauber, who is expected to step down due to health reasons. Meanwhile, around 450,000 members of the Social Democratic Party have begun voting on whether or not to enter into another grand coalition with Merkel's conservatives. Results are expected in early March. This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. A bomb scare forced hundreds of people to evacuate South Africa's main airport on Monday after authorities identified a suspicious bag. The incident caused delays to several flights, and passengers were forced to wait for 2 hours before returning to Johannesburg O.R. Tambo Airport, the largest in Africa. No one was reported injured. Libyan authorities have voluntarily deported around 250 African migrants back to their home in Niger. The migrants were given one-way flight tickets, food, drinks, and new clothing before departing. The United Nations International Organization for Migration spearheaded their release. And now in sports, Germany's Winter Olympic bobsleigh team in Pyeongchang, South Korea, finished second, third, and fifth on Monday, falling just behind first-place finishers Canada. Germany has a total of 9 golds and 18 total medals and stands at second on the table. Norway leads the overall medal count with 27. For more news and information, visit our website at dw.com. I'm Shay Meineke.
Welcome back once again to the program. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
We begin today's program in Togo, where political talks between the government and the opposition kicked off in the capital Lomé, seen by many as the last chance to resolve a bitter dispute over the rule of embattled President Faure Gnassingbé. For the last 6 months, the two sides have been locked in a power struggle that threatens to plunge the country in turmoil. Before we came on air, I spoke to Ella Janine Abata, a researcher from the Institute of Security Studies in Senegal, and I started by asking her whether there could be a breakthrough now that the two sides have agreed to hold face-to-face talks. Take a listen.
I think what everyone hoped for, the international community, but also Togolese citizens, is that this will be an opportunity to find a lasting solution out of the crisis that Togo has been experiencing since August, but it's a crisis that actually dates back to 2002, when the current president, Fadda, changed the constitution to stand for re-election. So I think the hope of everyone is that they actually reach a consensus and that they could find a lasting solution out of the crisis that the country has been experiencing.
Now, the talks are very crucial for the political crisis plaguing the country since, well, August 2017, like you mentioned, but a number of obstacles persist. What are some of these outstanding stumbling blocks for these talks to materialize?
The first one is the objective of the dialogue for each of the parties involved. So there are 7 delegates from the government, 7 delegates from opposition parties. And for the opposition parties, for them, the aim of this dialogue is to return, is a return to the 1992 constitution, but also to discuss condition for the departure of the current president, for Yassin Bey. They don't want the president to stand in 2020. For the government, the aim of this dialogue is to come up with a consensual reform project that will be submitted in referendum. As you have mentioned, since 2006, there have been a number of dialogue in Togo, but then the reform that many people, that everyone is waiting for, have not been implemented.
Political analysts and observers think that ECOWAS, the Economic Community for East African States, and the African Union should be involved in these talks. But from time to time, we've seen that internal problems require homegrown solutions exclusively to come out with a plan rather than external factors meddling or even having some kind of influence.
Homegrown solution is crucial to end the crisis going on in Togo, and I think that is what is happening. The involvement of ECOWAS has been very important to bring the parties together, given the degree of mistrust between the government but also the opposition party. So the role of ECOWAS has been very important to bring the parties together, but also to facilitate the ongoing dialogue that is between Togolese actors. So the dialogue is still between Togolese actors, but ECOWAS is working and acting as a facilitator.
What role are civil society groups play in these talks or dialogue?
I think they're playing a very, very important role by putting pressure on the different actors involved in the dialogue to reach a consensus. And civil society has been very vocal. Even the Catholic Church has been vocal.
I was speaking to Ella Janine Abata from the Institute of Security Studies in Dakar on the resumption of dialogue between opposition groups and the government. And Zipporah, we have some comments from our usual commentators and all that.
Yeah. First of all, on Facebook, people are very active on that matter. We have Amtala Ba, who says, kudos to Togo. Dialogue is the way to go. And there's also someone who is saying, why African leadership always with bloodshed? With bloodshed, this is bad to our leaders, he says.
Our usual contributor, Isaac Ehoza Godwin in Liberia, says, finally peace will reign. And Sopluchi Kingsley ironically said, after killing protesters, they're coming back to dialogue. Why not start with dialogue instead of killing? I find that interesting.
Yeah, that is a good question, yeah. And Lamin Jaita says, Yesimbe must only resign and be charged for the innocent lives he lost.
And Sunny Chris says, thanks, DW. I'm listening from Monrovia, Liberia. Many thanks. Keep those comments flowing. And we'll always read them whenever we can, live here on air.
And proceeding on now to Syria, Syrian media is reporting that pro-Assad forces will enter Syria's Afrin region to help Kurdish militias repel Turkish troops and could arrive in the rebel-held area within hours.
Turkey's foreign minister responded to the news by saying any move by Damascus to clear Kurdish militias from the border area would be welcome. But if the Syrian regime moved to protect the Kurds, then the Turkish assault would continue. Turkey's cross-border offensive into Syria, which is called or dubbed Operation Olive Branch, began last month. Here's a report by Solomon Shudayinde.
Turkish Foreign Minister Mevlut Cavusoglu has warned Damascus about sending troops to back the Kurdish militia, after reports that the militias allied with the Syrian government will enter the northern Afrin region within hours. pro-government forces were getting ready to enter Afrin, which has been targeted by Turkish forces and their Syrian military allies since January, when Ankara launched Operation Olive Branch, opening a new front in Syria's seven-year-long war.
Bu haberleri ben de gördüm bu sabah.
I have also seen the reports this morning. There is one thing we have been saying clearly since the beginning. The aim of our Afrin operation, meaning Olive Branch operation and our Euphrates Shield operation, is obvious. To eliminate the terrorists from there, we have cleaned Daesh, Islamic State terrorists from this region with Euphrates Shield, and we have embarked on this operation to eliminate the terrorist organization YPG Kurdish Militia and PKK Kurdistan Workers Party that carries out attacks against us and poses a threat against Turkey.
Bu konuda da yine Ürdün'le aynı çizgideyiz. Birlikte destekliyoruz.
Ankara considers the Kurdish People's Protection Unit, YPG, part of the main Western ally in the fight against the Islamic State extremist group in Syria, a terrorist organization because of its ties to a Kurdish insurgency in Turkey.
Solomon Shadede reporting.
Authorities in Nigeria are releasing hundreds of people accused of supporting an Islamist extremist group, citing lack of evidence. They are among the more than 1,000 suspected Boko Haram members whose trials began last Monday at a military barracks in the central Nigerian town of Kayinji. The suspects were accused of belonging to Boko Haram or for concealing information about the group.
Nigerian President Muhammadu Buhari recently said the era of Boko Haram terrorism is gradually drawing to an end. However, the group continues to launch suicide bombing attacks in the country's northeast and its leader remains at large. I talked to Nigerian legal expert Manasara Ibrahim on what the release of the Boko Haram suspect means due to lack of evidence.
Not necessarily whatever the security agencies will gather as evidence will be admissible in law. Especially in Nigeria that is having challenges of admissibility of some electronically generated evidences. So it is important there should be synergy among the three. One, those that are arresting. Two, those that are making investigations in order to have corroborative facts, in order to have evidences and exhibits that will be used in the court. Vis-a-vis the third one, the lawyers that are in. So that you need to have them as one team. You need to have them working together. You need to have congeniality in the way they work. Otherwise, you will always get a case that will be thrown out for lack of evidence.
I understand that the freed suspects will be returned to their home states for proper rehabilitation before being sent back to their families. What does proper rehabilitation actually mean?
There are some of them that if you don't set specific processes of socially de-radicalized, they will go and pollute the society, and before you know it, there will be some other problems. So it is the responsibility of the government, of the community leaders, of the traditional rulers, of whosoever is involved, including the parents and the relatives, to assimilate them freely, but at the same time to do as much as possible to let them realize the danger and the evil machinations of that ideology they are hoping to live in.
Does this signal a defeat in the fight against Boko Haram?
It is only establishing that the position of the law in Nigeria derives to fair hearing. Nigeria law convicts on the basis of a concrete assembly of facts, concrete assembly of evidences and witnesses. So that is the position of the law, and fair hearing is one of the cardinal objectives of the rule of law.
Nigerian legal expert Manasara Ibrahim.
And at this moment, we'd like also to welcome our followers on Facebook, DW Africa. And of course, we are glad to read some of your comments. Tony Oraba says, so in Nigeria, if someone is wrongly arrested and detained and later found not guilty, the same person is required to go for rehabilitation before joining family members? He wonders.
I think Salis Abdullah says, I think the government has made a mistake for letting them leave prison. They deserve death sentence.
But of course, you know, just to remind him that capital punishment is still illegal in Nigeria. Lamin Jete says, we hail the democracy and respect for rule of law taking shape in Nigeria.
And Daniel John Mark says hundreds of Biafrans are languishing in Nigerian prison simply because they are lawfully agitating.
Many thanks for your comments. Keep them flowing on our Facebook page, DW Africa. And of course, we are glad to read them live here on air. And in case you're just joining us, you're listening to DW's Africa Link program coming to you live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. And don't forget, we're also live on Facebook. Share the audio and leave your comments there. Coming up in the next 15 minutes, we will be hearing why people living along the shores of Lake Victoria risk contracting cholera because of hygienic conditions.
When it comes to dark, at around 7, they always close our toilets. And the people go around easing themselves, defecating around.
And of course, Zipporah, I'm looking at that report about, you know, how many people, instead of using the lake for fishing and other purposes, and actually do use it for some other not so good acts.
Unfortunately, yeah, we will hear that. But before that, Isaac, first we go to Gambia, which it's been 1 year since Adama Barrow was sworn in as the president, replacing longtime and authoritarian ruler Yahya Jammeh. Since he took over, Barrow has been trying to repair the damage left by his predecessor Jammeh, who has been since in exile in neighboring Equatorial Guinea. His 1 year in office also coincided with the country's 53rd independence anniversary. But for many, away from the pomp that goes with such big days in Africa, it was his chance to reflect on the achievements since he came into power last year, promising to effect major changes and reforms. DW's Omar Wali in Banjul went to find out what Gambians think of Adama Barrow's performance so far.
February 18 marks not only Gambia's 53rd years of independence, but the day Barrow took oath as the country's third president. Barrow's 1 year in power has had its ups and downs. His government has been praised for improving the country's human rights credentials, as well as restoring Gambia's ties with the International Criminal Court and the Commonwealth. In his view, President Barrow says freedom of speech is one of his regime's successes the past years.
We have won the war against dictatorship.
We have won the war against dictatorship, which is the easiest part. Maintaining the peace to our democracy will be our utmost challenge, which will require patience, tolerance, and even mistakes will be made. But we will correct them as we work towards perfecting the new Gambia.
As we work towards perfecting the new Gambia.
But many here are yet to feel that impact of that new Gambia, and that patience is slowly running out. Barrow has been criticized for the ongoing high unemployment rate and the regular power outage. Many say he is slow in tackling social economic problems, and the so-called democracy is being tested by a citizenry divided along political and ethnic lines. Many who follow Barrow's independent speech have varied opinions.
I would like him to improve the economy of the country. Like, the market values are very high. Others are low. Though the fare go down, but the market, he should improve on it.
But in 53 years, you know, the British have gone. We have almost three successive governments. That is the First Republic, the Second Republic, and then we are now into, we have another president called Mr. Adama Barrow. But now with the new political dispensation, you know, we are very hopeful that the government, you know, would observe and then respect the rights of the people, because already they have manifested that. You know, almost they are 1 year, maybe 1 year, 2 months, 1 year, 3 months in the office, and then things are going on finely at the moment.
Some of the achievements that we've seen within 1 year from the president, His Excellency Adama Barrow, is with regards to the media, there is a big reformation that has occurred. Because during the last 22 years, we've seen journalists are not given the room and the opportunity to do their work. He came and then gave us the opportunity in the field of broadcasting, in the field of printing, in the field of television and online. You can write whatever you want to write, in as much as it is the real information, it is the truth, it is the fact. Barrow has given us that opportunity. And now, even if a journalist said something which is not real or which is not in line with the constitution, you will be called for questioning, but they will not harass you, they will not intimidate you. But in the last 22 years, that was not something that was happening. So journalists has to move out in exile and stuff like that. So with regards to the judiciary, there was nothing like independence of judiciary. But now, when Barrow came, we've had a very wonderful and an international Chief Justice, which is Hassan Diallo. He has given us an example when it comes to dispensing justice.
Barrow has also suspended death penalty, which was last used under Jammeh in 2012 by executing 9 death row inmates by a firing squad as he works to rebuild the new Gambia.
Omar Wale reporting from Banjul.
Now, we asked you on our Facebook page, 53 years of independence and 1 year of Barrow in office, how far has the country progressed? And of course, as usual, many of you were quick to send us your reactions. Like Sima Trono says, of course, Barrow is making some progress since the freedom of speech that Gambians were crying for two decades has been restored. The same goes for the killing, torture, and mismanagement of our funds. Remember, all these changes cannot be done in a day.
Ernesto Otem says it's a long way to go, not only for Gambia, but all of Africa. This is rooted in the fact that having a different political ideology from those in power makes you an enemy. Above all, until we start having independent African governments that do not need the IMF and France, we will be corrupt.
Well, I think, Zipporah, a mix of reactions here from our users. And yeah, I should say at this moment, like, you know, Jerome Crom is of a different view. He says, we are going from one dictator to the next. That's a point to ponder. And you can still tell us what you think about Adama Barrow's performance 1 year since he was elected as the new Gambian president, you know, he replacing long time, like you mentioned, you know, introducing the report. Yeah, Jammeh, who was an absolute king and now currently is in exile in neighboring Equatorial Guinea. We'll be back right after this.
Health check.
Now, Ugandan scientists have warned of a likely massive cholera outbreak in regions on the country's lakes that could spread to other parts of the Great Lakes region should poor hygiene practices continue among the communities living along the shores. According to Professor Christophe Garimoy Orach of Makerere University, studies show that Lakes Victoria, Albert, and Edward, which are major sources of livelihood to many people, could be reservoirs for the disease. He told DW that cholera stays and hides in the lakes, and people who use this water get infected and move elsewhere carrying the germs with them. From Kampala, Frank Iga sent this report.
I am at Butebere landing site on the shores of Lake Albert to interact with fishermen on health risks due to poor hygienic conditions. Yusuf Babalande is one of the fishermen who tell me that due to unavoidable circumstances, fishermen like him have no option but to use the lake to answer nature's call.
Defecating in the lake is a must for fishermen because there's no toilet in the middle of the waters. We used to have papyruses that purify water. Unfortunately, they were destroyed. Now all the dirt goes direct into the water, so chances for cholera outbreak are 100%. Generally, people are dirty. Whatever they use is dumped into the lake.
According to scientists, the cholera-prone districts also referred to as hotspots include Hoima, Pakwach, and Nebi. Professor Christopher of Makerere University, who spearheaded this research, says some fishermen deliberately defecate in the water with the belief that they will catch loads of fish.
The situation is bad because it's an indication of eating feces. The lakes, in our study, we took various samples of water, and the indications are that at points along the lakes where we were able to take some samples, in some cases, there are indications that they could be reservoirs for cholera. The practices of the fishermen influence the areas of the lake that may be serving as reservoirs for cholera.
At Gaba Landing site on Lake Victoria in the outskirts of Kampala capital, the situation is not any better. People of this community testify to polluting the environment. Wandera Baba, who operates a retail shop, tells me outbreak of diseases gets worse during the rainy season.
When it comes to dark, at around 7, they always close our toilets. And the people go around easing themselves, defecating around. And when the rain comes, it washes away all those fishes into the lake. So when people come to collect water, they will have these diseases. And that's how diseases are spread around this lake.
Whereas the government has come up with a number of measures, including enacting laws to protect the lakes from pollution, locals don't adhere to these laws, as explained by Alfred Akankwasa from the government's fisheries department.
Directorate of Fisheries has put in place quality assurance rules 2017, and these rules provide the code of conduct of the different stakeholders in the fishing community. These rules also provided for penalties for those who are against the sanitation and hygiene rules in these communities. These rules have also established the basic requirements of the fish landing sites and also the penalties for those who go against these standards and guidelines.
That report was filed by Frankie Ga in Kampala. Now, Zippy, chicken and chips or fufu and ugali? Do you eat for status, health, or to fill your belly? That's our discussion topic this week on our Africa Youth Show. But before you leave all your comments, we want to share some of the comments that many of you have been sending. And of course, Ben Potter says, it is said that health is wealth. I will not risk my life just to impress my friend.
DK Victor says, fufu is good. Best for vegetable soup. Healthy, more vegetable, very less fufu.
Oh, now that's sharpening my appetite. I think I should eat fufu this evening. And Yam Bazia says, fufu, ugali. No, it's not just healthy, but also delicious. One can combine it with meat, vegetables, sauce, etc. And I think, Zipporah, I've sharpened enough your appetite. Let's
I'm
leave for time being.
Yeah.
Let's talk sports now.
Yeah, now I'll take you to the sports world. It was a weekend of action in the ongoing Winter Olympics and the FIFA Under-17 World Cup qualifying matches. Samson Omale has more from Abuja.
As we enter the final week of the Winter Games in Pyeongchang, members of the Nigeria's trailblazing bobsled and skeleton teams are still battling to qualify for the next round. Nigeria's bobsled team of Seun Adigun and Akwoma Omoaga dropped one spot from 19th to 20th in Sunday's official heats 3 and 4. Both Adigun and Omoaga finished with a time of 52.96 seconds and 53.60 seconds in heats 3 and 4 respectively. The pair of Adigun and Omoaga will take part in heats 5 and 6 official training on Monday. The girls have been sharing their experience so far representing Nigeria at the games.
So it's almost like second nature to be Nigerian and represent Nigeria and show our patriotism. And so just being able to show people that it's okay to represent where you're from, I think is a powerful message that hopefully we've been able to translate.
It's been super cold, but I think that we're here for the Winter Olympics. So for it to be anything other than cold, this is what we expected, and this is like setting the tone for the Winter Olympics.
But the games have been tarnished by latest revelation of Russian athlete Alexander Krushelnitsky, who is suspected of testing positive for banned substance melodium. Krushelnitsky risked losing her bronze medal, which she won with his wife in the mixed double, once the B-sample result is out. The Court of Arbitration for Sport, CAS, has opened the case against the 25-year-old following a request from the International Olympic Committee, IOC. The president of the Ghana Football Association, Kwesi Nyatake, has heaped praises on the Black Maidens for qualifying for the 2018 FIFA Under-17 Women's World Cup in Uruguay. The Maidens thrashed their counterparts from Djibouti 10-0 at the Cape Coast Stadium on Sunday in their final round qualifiers. Evans Adolti and his ladies go through 19-0 on aggregate after a comprehensive win in the first leg. Nigeria women team hopes of qualifying suffered a major blow after they were held to a 1-1 draw by Cameroon in the second leg match, losing on away goal rule after a 3-3 aggregate. But South Africa's Botswana is celebrating its victory after beating Morocco 1-0 in the return leg to qualify 6-1 on aggregate to qualify. It is the first time since 2010 that South Africa has made it into the biannual global championship. The coach, Simfiwe Duludulu, is elated about the win.
Looking at these girls' faces when they scored that one goal and the referee said it's done, they just went down and were in tears. And that one goal was for us to keep dreaming. And that took us to Uruguay, and that is where we are going.
In the Bundesliga, the first of five Monday night Bundesliga fixtures this season takes place tonight as Eintracht Frankfurt hosts RB Leipzig. Two of Africa's finest, Kevin Boateng from Ghana, may likely line up for Frankfurt against Naby Keita from Guinea. Some sports fans have been sharing their thoughts with me on today's game and Bayern's 2-1 win against VfL Wolfsburg this past weekend.
I actually think this is one of the biggest fixtures when it comes to the Bundesliga. Definitely RB Leipzig. They shocked us last season, fighting for the title. Unfortunately, they couldn't get to it because of the firepower from Bayern Munich, but definitely you can write them off. Naby Keita, he's a super striker, he's a super player.
Anytime we see Bayern not get a result, maybe, or lose, you know, it's a huge deal for the Bundesliga.
Samson O'Malley with that report. Many thanks for listening.
I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Ngabi. Thanks for listening.